Hi. My presentation, a public health perspective on ethics, social justice, and organizing in response to the occupation of Palestinian lands, comes out of my experience here in APHA, and it's specifically in response to those people in APHA and elsewhere who have challenged the notion that opposing Israel's policies of exploitation, oppression, theft through the occupation is specifically an important public health issue. I'm going to be arguing that public health ethics and practice strongly support opposition to military occupation, which seems obvious to me, siege, colonial expansion, racism, and health inequalities. Our commitment to public health values makes our opposition to the Israeli occupation and siege basically a no-brainer. As Amy indicated, I've been involved in working in APHA on this issue for a while, and my involvement began in 2008 after a short visit to Gaza. I had been very active in APHA for a number of years. I'm a co-founder of the Jail and Prison Health Committee connected to the medical care section. And because of my work there, I got to know a little bit about how APHA functions, how to create resolutions, et cetera, et cetera. So when I was in Gaza, I was a guest of the Gaza Community Health Center and the program there. And I thought, what can I do that maybe somebody else wouldn't think of doing, and what can I do that could be helpful to people in Gaza? And it occurred to me, and I had this conversation then, that one of the things that I could do was to go back to APHA and get some kind of a resolution passed, which indicated that from the point of view of public health, this occupation is damaging to the health of people who live under it. And therefore, since in public health we operate upstream, our focus should be on getting rid of the occupation. And I'll say a little bit more about that in my presentation. But that was the beginning of my involvement in APHA. And I came back. That trip was in the middle of the summer, and I came back and submitted a late breaker resolution because the siege had just intensified. It didn't pass, but actually it was tabled by a 51-49 vote. That was the closest we have come in the last 7 years to passing a resolution. And some people say that's because the opposition hadn't mobilized yet. But I just wanted to mention that as like how I got involved, and the focus of my activism has been really within APHA. All the speakers that you've heard so far combine a commitment to service, advocacy, but also they've all come to the point of political activism, working for social change, and opposing the occupation. And I hope that everybody here will understand that while we can contribute in the form of service, research, etc., it's important that we think about taking that next step to say very explicitly, I oppose this military occupation. So I'm going to give you some reasons why we should do that and why it's obvious for those of us who are in public health. And I'm going to begin by talking about ethics, obviously. Well, maybe not obviously, but I have no financial relationships to disclose. So what are public health ethics? In 2002, the APHA Executive Board formally adopted a code of ethics, which had been developed by a working group of within APHA over a two-year period. Now, I want to point out that almost every policy of APHA is adopted by the Governing Council, but in this case, this code was agreed to and voted on by the Executive Board, and it does not appear in any APHA policy list. So I do want to point out that, you know, we do have officially this code, and I want to emphasize a few things from it. This is the code that was adopted by our Executive Board. I've marked in red what I think are some of the important points in this code, and the reason I've marked them is because I think these are things that you can refer to when somebody says to you, why do you oppose this occupation? Public health should address the fundamental causes of disease and the requirements for health, aiming to prevent adverse health outcomes. You can see how that would apply. It is important to respect the rights of individuals in the community. We need to ensure opportunity for input from community members, something which does not happen under occupation in terms of the basics of health. Public health should advocate and work for the empowerment of disenfranchised community members, aiming to ensure that the basic resources and conditions necessary for health are accessible to all. You've heard in these presentations that that is obviously not the case. There's, I'm going to go on to number six. Public health institutions must or should obtain community consent for the implementation of policies and programs. And institutions should act in a timely manner to utilize the information that they have to create these resources and respond to the mandate given to them by the public. It's important to respect the diverse values, beliefs, and cultures in the community. It's important to enhance the physical and social environment. We haven't heard too much about that today, but I think most of you, I don't know if you're aware, but the physical environment of both the West Bank and Gaza is constantly being destroyed. And if you were in our morning presentations, you may have heard about the fact that the situation in terms of water in Gaza is an unsustainable situation, and that clean drinking water is something which is basically not available, and it's going to become, something completely unavailable next year, in 2016. As well as, of course, there's the exploitation of the natural resources in the West Bank, whether it's mineral or other kinds of natural resources, theft of water, et cetera. The physical and social environment. Confidentiality of information. One of the things that hasn't been presented here is the fact that sometimes when people do go from Gaza into Israel to access health care, they are called in for security conferences before they're given permission to travel. And public health institution, professional competence, of course. And as another point, public health institutions and their employees need to engage in collaborations and affiliations that build the public's trust and the institution's effectiveness. So, as you see, I'm not just talking about health, you know, particular public health clinics, et cetera. I'm talking about if we're concerned about the health of a community from a general point of view, what are the basic ethics that should guide us? And what about and this is supposed to be the basic commitment of APHA. So What about APHA's commitment to social justice and public health? I've taken some quotes here from an article by our executive director, and I just want to emphasize in the parts that again in red, health equity means social justice in health. Ensuring social justice is therefore one component in achieving health equity. How does the occupation stack up against these ethics and commitments? Don't take it from me, take it from WHO. The greatest challenge facing the health sector in Palestine is the presence of the Israeli occupation. What are the ethical implications for us as public health professionals? I believe the implication is that as public health professionals, we can and should refer with confidence to the ethical principles of public health and its commitment to social justice when we respond to or oppose the occupation. You've heard about a variety of contemporary strategies for public health professionals concerning the occupation: service trips, research, education, testimony, policy work, and activism through various organizations. I want to point out that a number of, we've heard very minor reference to this, but there are some difficulties that people have faced both in medical schools and public health locations and in academic institutions. And I have a handout to share with you about some reports that have been done about the struggles that people have had. One report from Palestine Legal and Center for Constitutional Rights, a second one from Jewish Voice for Peace, and this last one that I have down here at the bottom here, this is a report from the American Anthropological Association, which is, about its proposed academic boycott of institutions. And you might find these to be useful resources in your work. Within APHA, we have proposed in the past a variety of resolutions and policy statements. We have attempted to have a fact-finding study tour. We've worked a little bit on free speech protection. And this year, we plan to continue in these areas. And you can get more information about the work that we're doing by contacting Ashley, Professor Hagopian right here.
Or Nancy Stoller.
And so my basic point that I want to make is to support the core values of public health, support the end of the occupation. Thank you.
All right, thank you to our speakers. Just to recap, so that we'll remember everybody you might want to ask questions of. First, we heard from Alice Rothschild, who talked about the importance of narrative in this work and has incorporated this work into her practice. Then we heard from, who was next after you? Alan Myers, who has done traveling to the region and has also incorporated this work into his practice as a pediatrician. And then we heard from Ellen Isaacs, who talks about, who talks about the context, the larger context of racism and capitalism in which these power relationships exist. And then we heard from Jerry Gorman, who spoke about her work at the University of Illinois at Chicago, working with nursing students on these issues. And finally, Nancy Stoller, who focused on the work within APHA. So thank you all for your contributions to this. And again, for those who came in late, the frame here is, as Americans, how can we be accountable destruction of the Israeli occupation of Palestine and incorporate this work into our public health practice. So let's open it to the audience for questions of our panelists. Yes, up here.
So I'm a medical student and...
stand up.
So I'm a medical student, and obviously one thing that would be that I'd like to see my career go is to participate in the witnessing that's a long way away. I'm curious, especially for those of you who are physicians, what opportunities or options you think are available for solidarity work for people who have yet to complete their clinical training.
So I think one of the things you can do in medical school is to have programs to educate your community, because most medical students don't know much about the occupation and solidarity movements, etc. So having speakers, having conferences, bringing this up as an issue that needs to be discussed. You can also go on human rights trips to the region, even if you don't have medical skills. And bearing witness and then coming home and talking about them is very important. I mean, one of the things Palestinians always say to me is, go home and tell my story. No one sees my story, no one hears my story. So just because you don't know how to take out an appendix doesn't mean that you can't be really valuable. There are also a lot of activist organizations, from Students for Justice in Palestine to Jewish Voice for Peace to whatever
Physicians
for Social Responsibility, that have activities and campaigns and educational events, and become active in those. There are also various campaigns. For instance, there's a British psychiatrist, Derek Summerfield, who has works on the issue of torture, and so there are things to sign, petitions to distribute, get your classmates organized to think about torture as an issue for doctors. That's, torture happens because the physicians who've been co-opted say that the person being tortured can tolerate another bit of torture. I mean, that's totally unethical, so why is that happening? I mean, to have those kind of conversations in medical school, I think, is really useful and important for broadening the minds of your comrades.
Thank you.
I think Ellen wants to say
something. Yeah. Sorry, two things. I think the reason I decided to go on the trip with Alice and Alan was after I heard them speak here, and to me they made a very important point, which was that the amount of medical care you can give in a 2-week or even a 4-week visit to Palestine or anywhere else is really not very significant in the health of the people that you're meeting. What's really important is that you're going to talk about the situation when you get home, and your cachet as a student or professional lets you talk to more people. So I think, to me, that was the real reason I chose to go with them, and I think it's very true. And I think also, as you've learned, that there's great parallels between the oppression and racism that goes on in Palestine and that goes on here and many other places. And it's very heartening to me that the Black Lives Matter, for one, has formed support groups for Palestinian activists. And it's very important, as Alice said, what you do here, because right now, Students for Justice in Palestine, as well as students active in Black Lives Matter, are being very heavily targeted on American campuses. They are being even criminally charged for trespassing, just with protesting. They're being attacked as being racist themselves, being anti-Semitic, or being unpatriotic, and they're being given all kinds of economic penalties, like being required to provide massive security at their own expense for any events that they sponsor. So getting involved in those organizations in your schools and universities and supporting those students is very important, because they're being massively attacked lately.
Okay. And here's resources for how to approach it in this handout to approach attacks that you may face in your work.
And just one quick suggestion is, there have been discussions going on right now about having a health, public health, broadly formation within the activist organization that Alice mentioned, Jewish Voice for Peace. So I'd suggest getting on the mailing list. You don't have to be Jewish to be active with this list for this group, but I'd suggest just getting on the mailing list if you aren't, because there will be word sent out about that.
Okay, more audience comment, question. Maybe we'll take two or three and then bring it back to our panel. No more comments, really? Yes, back there.
Is
seems like this is some more, this audience is more supportive of hearing your message. I wonder if you could all comment on this message, bring this message to groups that may be opposed, or how to begin the conversation with people that might not want to hear it.
Okay. A couple other comments before we turn it back to the audience. Let me just say the last resolution at APHA lost by 75%. So there are audiences here who need to hear it. Other? Yes, here. Stand, please. And identify yourself, not by name necessarily.
Okay, I'm an acupuncturist. I'm interested a lot in bringing integrative communities, especially working around trauma, and I'm specifically wondering about secondary trauma, given you guys talked about how much the health workers there are facing not just secondary trauma because people are treating, but direct attacks. And so have any of your medical missions been focusing on treating the health workers themselves, just in terms of helping with all the physical, physiological, mental health that is going on?
So everybody heard that. The question was about the health of healthcare workers themselves, secondary trauma and so on. I worked on a study, for example, with one of my students who did this for her master's thesis, went and observed how ambulances are treated at checkpoints and interviewed some ambulance drivers. A very simple thesis, but she was able to publish that, and it's good work. Other questions? No comments, no questions? Yeah.
Well, what I'm a social worker, but I'm also in social media.
Let's let everybody hear you.
Nice and loud.
I'm a social worker, but I'm also social media. So I wonder, in terms of like getting this information out to a broader audience. I mean, are you guys working with anybody? Is that something you guys considered? You know, there are movements online like Humans of New York. You know, that really, I mean, he's traveled around the world now, and they're simple, although they need to be coordinated campaigns to get this type of information out. Because, I mean, the facts sort of speak for themselves, and you're dealing against a very strong PR machine, so it has to be equally as strong.
So everybody tweeted facts that you heard today from this session, right? And posted it on your Facebook page. I mean, we're kidding not, right? So getting out the message can happen for all of us in every opportunity that we see. Yeah. Yes, back there. You're what? Say louder.
Indeed.
And there's a couple more hands. Can we hear from them and then we'll come back? Yeah, we've kind of got people brave. Okay, stand up.
I'm in the occupational health section, and a large part of the work in the section over the last 7 years has been around the area of inequality in the work environment. There's been an attempt to integrate within schools of public health and other places where people teach curriculum. Ideas around how to address those both scientifically, practice, etc. Wondering if similar thoughts or approaches have been made towards schools of medicine, public health, where you're all teaching undergraduate liberal arts program, to consider ways in which to address in your courses, our courses, areas around Palestine and Israel. Because I think it's an important place to be. That's where we are.
Indeed, integrating this work into our curriculum is important, and I think most faculty find ways to do that, either directly or indirectly. Another.
The thing with this section did is that it didn't organize, develop curriculum that could be used beyond the people who were sitting in the room.
Right. Yes. And these can be published. So was yours published somewhere we can find it?
It's published. It's published in a journal 3 years ago, and it's now being published.
Great. Okay. So that's another thing we could do is. You had your hand up. So lessons learned. Okay. Any last words before I turn it over back to them? Yes, back here.
I just wanted to offer that our friends at democracynow.org provide very accurate coverage on this issue. And for those of you that don't know, the Daily News broadcast, and it's available online. But they have people like our panel who have been to the region, who have lived in the region, and are there on the ground and provide the kind of coverage that you just don't get.
Democracynow.org, it's a daily Monday through Friday news broadcast. It wakes me up every morning at 6 a.m. And also has a great website. So, last words from you guys. We are over time. Ella?
What I want to do is just respond briefly to a couple of things. The one statement about a question about secondary trauma was touched me because I spent 10 days in Gaza, and all of the clinicians, all the social workers, all the psychiatrists, all the teachers, all the people that were in caring professions, all had suffered the same level of trauma as their clients. So, for instance, the executive director of Gaza Community Mental Health Program had lost 28 family members, 17 of them children, 3 pregnant women. I mean, the level was just horrific. And I was like, what am I doing here? Why am I wasting this time? And later on, we had this fascinating conversation that it was actually very therapeutic for the providers to have us there so that they could tell us their stories, and that we were actually sort of doing psychotherapy for them. We were being their therapists. And so I realized that we did have a role there that was actually helpful for the people who were the providers, because they were equally traumatized. In terms of pushback, I've been doing a lot of public speaking, and now that I'm more public, I get a huge amount of pushback. I do have an article here that documents a whole section on what the pushback is like. You know, when I go to campuses now, the Hillel organizes and goes to the head of the university and says, I endanger the safety of Jewish students. Alumni write to the universities and say they won't donate if I'm allowed to speak. I mean, this is now happening quite regularly. The Jewish Federation cancels events. I mean, so once you start making noise, then you get the pushback, and you know, Facebook is just like a wonderful place for hate mail and things like that. In terms of social media, Jewish Voice for Peace has a huge social media presence, very active, and even like people like me have hired a social media consultant. So you know, we all are very aware of the power of social media. And you know, when the horrific things unfolded in Ferguson, Palestinian activists in the West Bank tweeted or whatever they did, communicated social media-wise to tell people how to deal with tear gas, which for me really meant that there was now a connection between Black Lives Matter and Palestinian activism. And one of the lessons learned in the academy is that the academy is really under assault from the right wing. And, you know, we mentioned Stephen Salinas, but, you know, the academics are losing their tenure there. I mean, so Jewish Voice for Peace now has a council of academics who are fighting this.
I just want to speak to the question of lessons for activists in academic settings. I think it's important to remember that the movement against the occupation and focused in general on this issue has really grown tremendously over the last 10 years. And there are very, very strong movements on a variety of campuses that have been somewhat successful in various ways. So there is pushback. I mean, people try to take my tenure away from me, you know. So, but the important thing is that wherever you go now, you can find people for example, student activism is really, really moving ahead. And so that's my main takeaway. It's a growing movement everywhere. And so you can join it, and if somebody criticizes you, you have plenty of people you can turn to who can give you support.
All right. Thank you very much. Don't forget there are still a few more sessions on this topic. One of them is Wednesday morning in this very room at 8:30. Also, there is a session tomorrow at 10:30 down the hall on attacks on health workers in dangerous places that might appeal to some people. There'll be speakers there from Syria and from who have witnessed the bombing of the hospitals. So thank you all for coming. Thank you.